Welcome back, folks. It's Mark Steiner. I haven't gone anywhere. And before we jump into our conversation with Charles Ellison, who's holding on, we're going to go right to Philadelphia, where he is at the Democratic Convention. I want you to give Patrick Maher a chance to close out his final thought. And we'll have him back because they're making a huge push this fall around these issues. Maybe too late for Covington, but maybe it's too late anyway. We don't know. But Patrick, share your final thoughts.
Thank you, Mark. As I was mentioning, we were part of the development of these regional plans at the Baltimore Metropolitan Council, which involved all of the region's governments, as well as nonprofits, foundations, the universities, including Morgan State. The plans that came out of them are not perfect, but they're good plans, and they really address many of the regional inequities that really need to change for Baltimore to become a stronger place. In the aftermath of that, we formed something called the Opportunity Coalition, and it's people that are familiar with the plans, who want to see those plans go somewhere. We're meeting, in fact, on September 13th at the Impact Hub in Baltimore, right on North Avenue. It's going to be at 6:30 p.m. September 13th, which is a Wednesday evening.
And we'll be on way before that again. Have a longer talk about
all
that.
All right, I hope
September
so.
September 13th.
we need to build a common set of interests so that we're able to hold our political leaders accountable. And that's what I'm hoping to do.
Robert, I'm sorry this was a little shorter tonight. We both anticipated today, but we will have you on the next few weeks, maybe later on this week as well, as we continue Port Covington. And we'll definitely bring you and the coalition on late August, early September again to keep pushing this idea out there. And we'll be right there with you.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Good to have you here. We're about to have a conversation with Charles Ellison. Stay with us. Don't go away. Welcome back. We have the Democratic National Committee's emails floating all over the place. We have a new vice presidential candidate in the mix. And, of course, we have our own Charles Ellison right here to talk about it. Charles Ellison, host of the Ellison Report here, Sunday nights at 9 on WEAA. And, of course, now the national correspondent for WEAA. Charles, how are you?
Mark, how's it going, man? Good to be here.
Good to have you with us once again, man, as always.
All right.
So we have a bunch of things here. We can, I guess, really begin with with an email here that I got this morning to talking about the DNC and these emails. And we'll get your response to this. Ready?
Right.
This is Debbie Wasserman. This is from Rebecca. Writes in, Debbie Wasserman Schultz stole both Hillary and Bernie, but all of us. Was ever knowing the result of a fair election. I have no understanding of why they're harping on if Russia was the source of hacking. No DNC person is denying that these are in fact valid emails, and therefore Debbie Wasserman Schultz did a horrific thing for her party and all Americans. Mm-hmm. That she and others stopped to point out all the good she has done without a moment of apology to Sanders was further disgusting. It is as if an award-winning teacher and good parent gets a chance to run a daycare center, then gets caught getting caught red-handed at molesting a child. The past good work is indeed eclipsed, and there's no path but immediate apology, dismissal, and maybe legal repercussions. She irrevocably stole from the American people that which cannot be replaced. I wish that is in the interest of true transparency that Senator Clinton would call on all pledged delegates to be released and for them to vote their conscience. She'll likely still win, but with less taint on the path to get there.
You know, that's very interesting. I would think that the assessment or the comparison to child molestation in a daycare center is a bit over the top. I mean, it's nothing like that. It's not on that kind of level. I will say this. I mean, you know, everybody's pretty much in agreement, and they've been in for some time now, Mark, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was a pretty ineffective chair of the Democratic Party. I mean, as ineffective as you could get. I mean, it was Democrats had been hoping that they could just keep the ship steady till the end of the Democratic Convention or till the end of this election. And that they could look fairly stable and in line and keeping their rank and file in line in contrast to the Republican National Committee, especially with a lot of the chaos that was happening during the Republican primary. And now, you know, sort of the roles and the dynamics have flipped dramatically within just one week. I will say this, and a lot of folks are saying that here in Philly, you know, the the release of those emails by WikiLeaks is suspect. And
what do you mean suspect?
It's suspect because, you know, you saw this breach go on about several months ago, that the DNC had announced that there was some kind of breach. You've even had some folks suggest that that somehow Republicans had orchestrated.
But let me just ask this, Charles. But what difference does that make if, in fact, they were real? And what it shows is there was absolute collusion on the part of some leaders of the DNC.
I would take the viewpoint that, yeah, okay, you know, there is that perception that it shows collusion by the DNC chair with the Clinton campaign. And people kind of, you know, tell us something we don't know. But at the end of the day, Sanders was very new to the Democratic Party. You can also make the argument that it's a Democratic Party chair essentially protecting her party from someone who came in who's, you know, Johnny come lately, who just came.
But that's not her job. That's not her job. That's not
that. Just comes on the scene suddenly and wants to run for president all of a sudden.
How can anybody justify that? I mean, the fact that she manipulated debates so the American people would not see them debate in prime time.
But you know what, Mark, I'll say this. How can anyone justify on November 8th if, because of this WikiLeaks email thing and because of all these other events and this, you know, the suspicious timing of all this information release, the scales are tipped in Donald Trump's favor, and he gets elected on November 8th. Then it's like Ralph Nader 2.0, and then look where Ralph Nader ended up. People barely mention his name. I'm probably the first one to mention his name in like since 2000. And then what's the point? You know, what's the point in releasing the emails at this time? Why not wait till after the election? Why do it at the end of the Cleveland convention when you know Republicans are going to get a bump? When you know this totalitarian-like nominee who's going to, you know, if he gets elected, I mean, who wants to even imagine what?
Well, obviously, I'm not a fan of Donald
Trump. What's the point? Yeah, but what's the point?
But no, but the point is that you see, you can't. The problem is blaming. Not dealing with what was released. You can't stop WikiLeaks from doing what they're going to do, no matter when
they
do it.
What's WikiLeaks' point? But that's the question. What's WikiLeaks' point? Why do it?
WikiLeaks.
What's the point of doing it? What's the strategy? What's the calculus?
Maybe there is no strategy. Maybe there's no strategy other than
strategy.
No. Other than the truth. Other than putting it out there. What really happened? That people always thought all along that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was doing this to manipulate the election in favor of Hillary Clinton.
Now, I'll be honest with you. I mean, real talk though, truth is not going to matter much when Donald Trump gets elected on November 8th.
If Donald Trump gets elected, you cannot blame it on WikiLeaks. That's total bull. You can't blame.
I'm not blaming WikiLeaks. I mean, it is. I mean, I'll also blame it on the Clinton campaign. I also blame it on Debbie Wasserman Schultz being very ineffective in her tenure as DNC chair. But I mean, you can't deny it. I mean, something like this comes at a really bad time, and the
there's no question about that.
Real suspicious. I mean, I'm just keeping it real with you.
The truth doesn't often come at an opportune moment.
Yeah, it comes a very opportune moment.
Right, so, you know, the truth doesn't often come at an opportune moment.
Who engineered that?
Right?
Right. I'm just saying. I'm just being real. So. I'm just saying that it's just that people should question that. And to me, I think a more prudent approach would be, okay, you know, like, this question's wait till after the election. Does it really matter whether or not that she was a biased chair or not? I mean, here you are, Hillary Clinton's about.
Well, it's going to matter because if she hadn't blown it, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary Clinton's about to become the official nominee in a few days. I mean, what was the WikiLeaks investigation going to do? What was that going to stop Hillary Clinton from becoming presumptive nominee? And then in some fiction, you know, suddenly you have Bernie Sanders become the nominee. That's not going to happen. So what's the, you know, that's why you have to question, well, what's the end game? Everybody's in.
No, that's the last thing I question. What I question is why the Democrats do things to hurt themselves all the time like this, instead of running an open, honest campaign and an open, honest committee, which they did not do. That's the problem.
But the big part of the problem, too, Mark, is that we live in an age where people are inciting just for the sake of inciting, just to make noise, just so they can, like, big up their brand on Twitter and on social media. And to what end? You know, what's the end game? What's the strategy?
The end game is to expose what they did wrong.
So you expose it, and then does that create any better quality of life on November 8th for all Americans or for those Americans?
Well, maybe it forces the Democratic National Committee to become a more democratic organization.
You can make the same argument for Republicans as well. I mean, they're both party machines that lack transparency and that lack fairness that are very biased.
I think Trump is the most horrible thing that's come on the political scene in my lifetime, and I have a long lifetime.
Really?
You know,
now you're a young man.
Yeah, right.
You're a young man.
Thank you, brother. I love you too. But we have Julius White jumped in the studio. I didn't expect to see him until tomorrow, but here he is today. Welcome, Julius.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Charles. I'm enjoying this debate. I'm loving it over here.
Well, you know, and you look at the polls today. I mean, Julia says an email over the weekend about the polling, and the latest polls today show Trump with a bounce, which often happens after a convention, but it is a disturbing bounce. Whether you look at the LA Times poll that gave a Trump was up 45-41. You look at the poll from Gravis, 51-49 for Trump. You look at all of them, they're all like popping up. This is a pretty distressing thing when you think about where America might be going.
Right. Julius, I didn't want to cut you off.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. You were asking why now, why the leaks. I think this was done. Whoever released the hacks, the emails, maybe to spur some type of a floor fight. At the convention about releasing those Bernie delegates, because they didn't believe at all throughout this whole primary that Wasserman Schultz was not being fair to Bernie, who tried to shut him down at every point. There were some Saturdays, if I weren't up doing some work, I would have known that the DNC debates were on, because they were always buried on the weekends on Saturday nights.
In the middle of basketball games.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and it was just, nobody understood that. You know, everything the Republicans had deep in prime, early in prime time.
But now we understand.
They even had a kid stable.
Right. So I think the Democrats have shot, she helped shoot the Democrats in their foot. And I don't know who, WikiLeaks is an anti-establishment group that will, part of their job is to expose people. I don't know who's really behind what happened. Nobody knows.
I'll say this. That term of being anti-establishment, particularly from people who are running for elected office, like a Bernie Sanders a Donald Trump, it bothers me, because when you get elected, you're going to become establishment. I mean, what does establishment mean?
I was talking about WikiLeaks at that
establishment.
Moment.
Yeah, same thing with WikiLeaks. I mean, what is WikiLeaks' cause? What is its purpose other than to blow up someone's spot? And then so Julian Assange, who's basically languishing in some Ecuadorian embassy in the UK. I mean, what's in it for him? And what does he get out of it? I mean, I think that's a legitimate question. But Mark, I will say this. I mean, it is legit. It's a legitimate argument. I mean, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was a very poor chair, and I agree with Julius. I mean, I was lamenting that the entire primary season. I'm like, what are Democrats doing? Like, what, you're having your debates on a weekend or on a weekday night? Mm-hmm. Like, are you crazy? And that's the reason. I mean, all primary long, it's been looking as if Republicans have been the only ones running for president. And that's tragic. And Democrats, especially under Schultz, they created that environment. They created that climate. So, in a way, a lot of people are relieved that she's going. Eventually, she was going to go at some point. But it's just the timing. I think there's more legitimate questions surrounding the timing of the release of these emails than there is about, because it's stuff that we already knew. It's like, tell us something we don't know.
But we didn't know the extent of it. I mean,
we didn't know the extent of it, but then,
and nobody paid attention to it either.
Yeah, I mean, why make it an even tighter race than it already is? I mean, thankfully, the convention bounce is not as bad as previous convention bounces for other nominees in the past. But it's still a bounce. And honestly, there's been a bounce for Donald Trump since the Dallas shooting. I mean, Hillary Clinton's been hemorrhaging white voter support since the Dallas shootings. And it got worse and with the Baton Rouge shooting. So, we kind of see what's on white voters' minds, or a lot of them at least. It never really was a post-racial environment, because President Obama only got, less than 45% of the white vote. So we know what's going on here, but that's the thing.
Julius?
Yeah, I'm looking at a poll here about these polls, and we were talking about that Suffolk, that bounce that Trump got. Let's look at it. Trump versus Clinton, 44-44 tied. This is over the weekend polling. Ohio, Trump versus Clinton versus Johnson versus Stein. Clinton 43, Trump 39, Johnson 5, Stein 1. So these polls will jump all over the place, and Mark and I, all of us were over the weekend trading numbers and emails, and sure, there's going to be a great bounce from this. But what they did not need going into this very first day, besides the storm they had this morning in Philadelphia, they did not need this type of news coming about their DNC chair and these emails. And if you get into them, they get a little bit salacious, and they wanted to talk about Bernie Sanders, question his religion. And
call him out as an atheist.
Right. You know, it's these Jesus things. And so, and some harsh language from Debbie Wasserman Schultz about who she was calling a liar and on down the line. So did not need this. I listened to a pundit yesterday on one of the cable networks saying, well, the thing is about this, we won't be talking about it tomorrow. Nonsense. We'll be talking about it all week. We'll be talking about it through November.
No.
So, I mean, elections have consequences, and so will these emails.
So what do you both see? We've got Mr. Governor Kane, Senator Kane, excuse me, as the vice presidential nominee for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see the rest of this convention playing out? I mean, there's already debates between, obviously, some of the former Bernie Sanders supporters though the polls show them a vast majority of Sanders supporters will vote for Clinton. This is a sizable minority that say, no, we will not vote for Clinton.
Hmm.
So where do you see this convention taking us? We have Raul Grijalva speaking tonight, who is a Bernie Sanders supporter. You've got Bernie Sanders speaking tonight. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Right.
And then the keynote tonight. Who's the keynote?
Is it Elizabeth Warren?
Oh, Elizabeth Warren. Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I kind of see this as I definitely you do get a sense here in Philly that Sanders supporters are sort of egging for, you know, some sort of confrontation, you know, or trying to be as loud as folks were, as anti-Trump or never Trump folks were on the floor of the Quicken Loan arena. So I do see something like that happen. If the Clinton campaign, the Clinton machine, doesn't manage to try to negotiate, you know, some sort of compromise or middle ground here with Sanders people. I mean, and they've got to be feverishly doing that right now, because they cannot afford to have that kind of hot mess noise on the convention floor in Philly or out in the streets, you know, across the street from the convention center or before City Hall. They can't afford to do that. So that's what right now at this point, if they don't do that, if they don't succeed in doing that and somehow negotiating with Sanders, that's what's going to happen all week.
How do you see it, Julius?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I think Donna Brazile is going to be walking around with a magic wand trying to make everybody's pains
because
go away.
Because she's now running the convention,
yes,
as opposed to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Right.
And she has that tough job. Ohio Representative Marsha Fudge is the interim convention chair. So both of these women will be walking around trying to express party unity. Don't go too far. You know, Bernie Sanders is going to do what he's going to do. He'll spend about 10 minutes talking about what he challenged the Democratic Party to do and what he got on the platform, what he still plans to fight for.
Right.
That's going to be the main. He's going to have to be the one to quell these protesters. I just did a report a few minutes ago that there's a young man who said, I don't care if you put a gun to my head, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I'm going to either write in Bernie Sanders or Jill Stein. And so you're going to have that. And those protesters, I understand this morning, Charles, they said this is the biggest protest. They didn't see anything like that in Cleveland. So they're going to have to listen to those voices, and Bernie's going to have to be the one to calm the waters.
Well, Cleveland, they were corralled.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia, they're going to be much more aggressive. Here's the danger. In Cleveland, the demonstrations are not as corralled, and there's a much larger police force that's known for breaking heads.
Mm.
And I think that's the real danger for the Democrats. If people feel like it, Charles, is like another 1968.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say this. I mean, you know, Philadelphia Police Department and others, I mean, they recognize, you know, kind of what the climate is, what the political climate is, you know, and I've talked to Philly police officers who are very cognizant, very aware of what's going on here, and they really are going to make a big effort towards making a balance. And I grew up with the police department. Yes, they have a history of cracking heads. I mean, they've cracked a few heads that I've known in my lifetime, and I've been thrown up against a few of their police cars. But you know, at the end of the day, they're really going to try to do what they can to kind of keep it safe down here downtown. But you know, I think with Sanders, he's also going to have to think about, well, not only what's the end game, but what's going to be my political legacy after this not just after this convention, but after this election, especially if Donald Trump wins, right? I mean, so, yeah, okay, he gets to go back to Vermont and get reelected, but does he want to be, but people within the Democratic Party are going to point fingers at him if Donald Trump wins. Does he want to be that dude? Because Ralph Nader ended up like that dude after the 2000 election. And Bernie Sanders, honestly, is on the cusp of being that dude.
Well, how can you say that, man? I know you have a real thing about Bernie Sanders.
Donald Trump gets elected. A lot of Democrats are going to be pointing at people like Bernie Sanders.
When people don't win elections, they want to find excuses and they want to be able to blame somebody else for their failures. Just like the now probably Congressman Brown wanted to blame the world for his loss to Hogan when he lost that election himself by the way he ran his campaign.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No,
In the year 2000, Al Gore couldn't even carry his home state.
Yeah.
And he would be President Obama, President Gore, to this day, according to Donna Brazile. That was a great book, and it was broken down well. He would have 11 electoral votes in Tennessee. He could have been president. Florida was gravy, but his own state,
he could not carry. And then he decided to give up the fight. He didn't pursue the fight. He backed away from the fight.
Yeah. But, you know, I'll say this, man. I mean, we already know that we're in a very polarized, divisive environment.
Yes, we are.
You know, and you got to maneuver through that. But you know, I'm just kind of making a case for, you know, why make it even any harder for folks that it already is. I mean, it's hard enough. So you know, Donald Trump gets elected, it's going to be even harder. You know, I'm just making the case for, hey, let's not make it any harder than it already is, fam. You know, so and that's what I'm saying. I mean, there's a real legitimate fear that a lot of folks have who are sitting on the sidelines, watching chaos erupt in both parties. But even
I agree.
We're walking the streets and they're like, you know, hey, if something erupts here in Philly and then this election is lost to this buffoon who's looking like Mussolini last week in his acceptance speech, you know, what was that all about? What was that for? You know, so you basically in Cleveland, you start the countdown to totalitarianism, and in Philly, where it all started, this is where democracy began. You're going to start the countdown, or you're going to accelerate the countdown to the end of democracy. I mean, that's not good. So, yeah, okay, times are rough. It's bad. Both the political parties are detached from the electorate and from average citizens. But, you know, the big question is, do you want to make it any worse than it already is? That's the question that Bernie Sanders supporters and Bernie Sanders himself has got to answer.
Well, I think it's a more complex answer than that. For many of his supporters, let me get a call on him before we have to end. 410-319-8888. Vince, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, good morning. I appreciate the conversation. I think politics is interesting, but one of the things that I wanted to make a point of is this: Hillary Clinton has rode the coattails of Barack Obama to get the black vote. Now she wants to ride the coattails of King to get the Virginia vote, as she then did in Miami. I think we need to be careful, because sooner or later, Donald Trump will ask Hillary to talk about herself. And I think you all are doing a great job shifting everybody's things, thoughts away from Hillary being Hillary Clinton. She can only do what she can do. But people are not going to buy Kane is the answer. She's still going to have to run for president one day. She rode through the coattails of Barack and just talked all about Donald Trump for 4 months right now. She's going to have to talk about herself, emails, and Donald Trump is not going to give her a break. The Republican Party is not going to give her a break. She's going to have to stand up and say, I'm running for president. Not Barack, not King, but I'm running for president. She did a great job in introducing him, and she don't want to talk about herself anymore. She can't talk about Donald. Now all she's going to do is try to sell Kane to win the election. And that's a good move on her part, because she's damaged bags. She's damaged goods.
So we have to close out here, but let me get quick final thoughts from our two guests in the studio.
I disagree with the caller. Remember, she was married to the first black president.
We needed that, man. Thank you, Julius.
I'll say this. I mean, that Democrats are really got this week have really got to focus on what makes Hillary Clinton and now Tim Kaine much more qualified to be president and vice president than Donald Trump and Mike Pence. They cannot spend this week just pouncing on Donald Trump and on social media and on the floor of the convention center, just talking all about the outrageous things that Donald Trump has done and said and tweeted out all week. They've really got to lay out a case for what makes them much more qualified and better to run this country, and to start talking about issues, because, I mean, we've spent an entire election just talking about people's personalities. And I mean, frankly, I'm tired of it. So maybe there's a hope that they can pivot to talking about really significant policy challenges and problems this week and turning a corner in that respect in this election.
I want to thank you both. It's good to have you in the studio, Julius White. Yes, we'll have you a great deal more. Our news director here at WEAA, and Charles Ellis, my dear friend, thank you for coming through as usual.
Thank you, Mark.
And we're looking forward to hearing more about you from Philly, and it's I always enjoy you on the air. Thank you so much for being with
us. Absolutely. Thanks for having me, man. Take care.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to meet some young people who are trying to make some changes. Stay with us.